Hi, this is Rob McCollum, one of the producers of 1865. Thank you for joining us on 1865 Inside the Episode, Episode 5. Lots of new information, again, has been revealed. Plots thicken, loyalties are firmed up, and the two guys that helped write it all are with me now, Stephen Walters and Eric Archilla. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So episode 5 starts with a flashback to, again, when Lincoln is alive, the war is still being progressed, and it's the lead up to the Hampton Road Peace Conference. What's the important piece of information that our audience needs to pull from this?
Well, I think the primary thing is Stanton wants unconditional surrender. He wanted to destroy the enemy until they can force on the South whatever change that they want to impose. And Hampton's Road was an attempt to reach a peace conference between these two powers, which Stanton would say they are not a country. They are treasonous.
They're an enemy force, not an
insurgency.
An
opposing country. Yeah. Well, and I think that it's also important to note, you know, for the listeners to think about is that there's a reason for this, right? And it's not just vengeance. The reason is that the Emancipation Proclamation is not settled law. You know, it's an executive order by a president during wartime. And the question of the 13th Amendment being ratified is still at play. And really, what Stanton is worried about is he's worried that if we start giving terms of surrender out to the rebels, that we're going to have to let the South back into the Union on their terms, and that the question of equality and the question of the future of the freedmen is going to be in the balance if that happens.
And this was actually a big legal political struggle at the time, because people on Wells' side believed the second the war was over that all of the states were automatically, unconditionally back in good standing with the United States.
And there are two ways of looking at that. One way is the sort of Lincoln malice towards none approach, the question of unifying the country, the question of putting us all back together whole. Then on the other side of that, for those folks who wanted to keep the white power structure in place, there's a little bit more of a nefarious purpose for wanting to give pardon, for wanting to put an end to the fighting, and for wanting to put the country back together. And that nefarious purpose, in my Steve Walters' opinion, is to deprive the freedmen of the rights that they know are coming.
And not to go off on a tangent, but sometimes people talk about the Three-Fifths Compromise and that being a racist thing, that the slaves' lives were not valued enough to be a full person. That was actually done to prevent the South from having more political power. And now that they are talking about making the freedmen citizens, they would be a complete person, which would actually give the South more power than it had before the Civil War.
From an electoral standpoint.
So,
because that population would now count more, and they would have more power, even though they had just rebelled against us and committed treason against the country.
So it puts Stanton in that position of wanting to give those people full citizenship and full power, but he has to make sure that the states have not been brought back in with full voting rights, or else the majority is gone.
And he has to make sure that the rebel forces have been brought to heel.
Right. And at this point, there is still active fighting.
General Johnston, a Confederate commander, is out in the field with many, many troops under his command. And I believe that it's when we say that more than Lee, that's an actual fact, I think,
yes.
Isn't it, Eric?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we bring to light in this episode is the role that the media is playing in shaping these arguments. We start out with an editorial calling Andrew Johnson the inebriate in chief and calling him, you know, the worst president that we've ever seen. And of course, Johnson is very distressed by this. And Stanton says, oh, this has nothing to do with me. I have nothing to do with any of this, sir.
Well, it's funny that later they explain it away that he was sick at the time and he needed some liquor to like make himself feel better, and that's why he was drunk at the inauguration.
Yeah, so he was drunk at his vice president inauguration, and then people are like, oh, well, he's just the vice president, he doesn't have any power, and then in a matter of weeks, he is the president.
Well, and certainly Lincoln never foresaw that Johnson would be the president of the United States. If Lincoln had had that benefit, I doubt he would have picked Andrew Johnson as his successor. But certainly, I think this is interesting. At the time, you know, Johnson, while he was a bigot by modern standards, was also against the South seceding. And he stood with the Union at that time, which made him very unpopular in the South.
Yeah, he was hated by the South because
they literally called him Andy the Toad. I mean, they despised him saw him as a traitor.
And he served as the military governor for Tennessee during the war.
And Lincoln chose Johnson as his vice president in his second election because he was trying to rally support in the border states. Because at that time, border states like the state of Maryland were very, very racist. And although they were, many of them were anti-secession, they were not pro-equality. And Johnson was sort of meant to appease that segment of the population.
So it's interesting that that devil's agreement ends up coming back to bite him and the rest of the country once he's gone.
Yeah.
So Stanton and Johnson have this conversation and says, look, I got to get this press off my back. Find Booth. That's the priority. And Stanton leverages that to say, okay, to do that, I need $100,000, which is how much in today's money?
It's over $1 million.
Million and a half.
That's a lot of money. And coming from the treasury of a country that's just been through a very, very expensive and debilitating war.
Johnson is, when he becomes president, is immediately frustrated for a lot of reasons. As we say, the First Lady won't even move out of the White House. So he's officed at the Treasury. You know, he can't even move into his own office. He's very frustrated by that. I think he probably feels that it's not his office to begin with. It's something that he has to earn. He has to convince the people that he has the right to be there. There is criticism in the press that certainly mounts later on in his presidency. But he's feeling pressure from all sides. And so I think when Stanton comes to him and says, look, you want Booth? This is the way to get it. Going with the idea of a bounty is not a bad idea.
And I think from modern standards, we, especially since Dick Cheney, vice presidents had a little bit more power. But at this time, vice president was a joke. I mean, he's an empty suit. And suddenly he's thrust into being the head of the country and
a little out of his element.
Out of his element.
Well, then the question of terms of surrender to the Confederate generals comes back into play when General Sherman starts sending telegraphs back and forth between Stanton. I love this exchange. I think it's a funny exchange, but the way that they are arguing with each other via telegram.
I will admit that is only partially real. The actual exchange was between General McClellan and Stanton, but we sort of co-opted it and put it into the mouth of General Sherman. But certainly they were arguing about this question, and Stanton did not want any terms to be considered. The only terms could be unconditional, as it was with Robert E. Lee.
Which is why we started with the cold open we did to kind of introduce that idea of where Stanton stands on all of surrender.
And this has major implications, right? I mean, if the terms of surrender are granted, and essentially what those terms of surrender said was that all's forgiven. I mean, it was sort of de facto universal amnesty. That would set a terrible precedent for what Stanton is trying to do in terms of preserving Lincoln's agenda.
Well, and that comes into question when they start talking about giving the land to the freedmen. And again, that land, the question of that land, needing the plantation owner's land to provide to the freedmen, it's now been promised to them, and we're finding out that Johnson is still not 100% behind that plan.
And we talk about this in an earlier episode, but that promise really did mean something to Edwin Stanton. It's a promise that he personally made, I believe, with General Sherman. I believe Sherman was also at that meeting. I could be getting the general wrong.
It was General Sherman with the 40 acres.
Yeah, so that promise really meant something to Stanton. And he was a guy who was raised by an abolitionist, and he was a guy who himself was more or less a lifelong abolitionist. But there was a practical element to this too, which we first introduced this idea in the episode. It's kind of a complicated idea, but not only were they going to give those lands to the freedmen, but some of those lands were going to be co-opted by the government and sold to private citizens, both white and North and South. And the proceeds from those land sales were funding the operations of the Freedmen's Bureau.
So yeah, without that sale, even if the Freedmen's Bureau are in power in theory, if they have no budget, it's the power of the purse strings.
Yeah, then they cannot deliver on hospitals or schools or education or anything else. And so it's a real problem if all of a sudden the lands that they have in their possession, which is over 1 million acres, that they had in their possession at the end of the war, if they suddenly have to return those lands to the plantation owners and the rich folks in the South who own that land, that's a major problem for Stanton.
So the way that Stanton decides to deal with that problem is to, again, weaponize the press and releases a statement saying this is the president's views, which were not in any way the president's views.
That's right. That's right. And that's an actual event that happened. Stanton really did put words into Johnson's mouth.
And so that's one of those moments where we use some real quotes.
Yeah. And backs him into a corner. And that's a problem for Johnson, because now he's on the record saying one thing. And if he goes the other direction, you know, the implication could be that he's kowtowing to the rebels.
Yeah. He looks like a flip-flopper, and there's already all of this, you know, angst in the zeitgeist of the time that he might not really be on the side of the Union, so he can't look to be helping them.
But that's a shocking event, that the Secretary of War goes to the press and speaks on behalf of the president. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And there was a misconception at the time when Andrew Johnson first became Lincoln's successor that he was going to punish the South. And so a lot of people were talking, and I think this release of these terms was one reason why people thought that, because Stanton put words in his mouth. But we learned very quickly that Johnson is not for any punishment to the South, which we'll get into.
So Johnson's response is, fine, you put me into the corner with the press, go ahead with these terms, but by God, find me John Wilkes Booth. And in this episode, they do. They have tracked Booth and Harold to a barn. Again, two of the conspirators that we hear much more about in our bonus episodes, but we hear a small snippet of the final moments of John Wilkes Booth's life.
That's right. And it was a 14-day manhunt. Is that right, Eric?
A 12-day manhunt.
And it was a 12-day manhunt. It was a 12-day manhunt, the largest manhunt in United States history. And they very, very, if you consider at that time, that's pretty fast. They capture him and David Harold at a barn on the Garrett farm. He is shot by, this is not in the podcast, but Eric, do you want to tell the story of Boston?
Oh, Boston Corbet. We want to go completely off on that tangent. The guy that shot him was a crazy, crazy person who had like castrated himself, because God told him to do it. And later he said God told him to shoot John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah, because they had hoped to take Booth alive.
Yeah, the orders were to bring him in alive.
Yeah, to bring him in alive, because they wanted to know who he was working with. Was he getting his orders from Jefferson Davis? Who else was involved? You know, what's the depth of the conspiracy? Those are questions that we never got to answer.
And one ironic thing is that Booth was shot very closely to the same spot that Lincoln was shot, that in the back of the head.
That is one thing I remember from junior high. That's like, of all of this podcast, that's one of two facts that I remembered from junior high, is that he was shot in almost the same spot. But again, hugely impactful, because proving that conspiracy for Edwin Stanton is the way to make sure that amnesty does not move forward.
Yeah.
And with Booth dead, that opportunity to prove a major factor in proving that conspiracy has been lost.
Yes, that's right. And this is one of those things that historically is, I think, hard for a modern audience to understand. Although I'll give an example. In the way that, say, the hearings for Judge Kavanaugh became a referendum on the question of Me Too, the movement of Me Too. Has it gone too far? Has it not gone far enough? You know, are we going to hang our hat on due process, or is an accusation enough to deprive an individual of whatever job it is that they have or want? In that same way that it becomes a referendum about one topic, the tribunal, which we're going to get into in later episodes, Stanton's attempt to prove this Southern conspiracy, that is what the tribunal becomes a referendum on. The whole manhunt. So that he can prevent a policy of leniency towards the South. Because it follows that if Jefferson Davis ordered the death of Abraham Lincoln, the murder of a sitting United States president, then Jefferson Davis, his vice president, his cabinet, his generals, and the rich plantation owners that funded that military apparatus, none of those people can be forgiven. And what that would do is that would dismantle the Southern power structure.
And allow the Freedmen's Bureau to have both the money and the lands that it needs to continue.
That's right.
So Stanton makes a speech very much to the same effect of like, we are not done. I know you're lauding me because Booth has been killed, and kind of goes on the speech circuit, which is what they did back in that time, but says, hey, we're not done. We must be resolute and unrelenting. The fight still goes on. Then the Lucy Hale story reinserts itself, because the diary of John Wilkes Booth is discovered and Lucy Hale is mentioned.
And I know that there is a historian listening to us right now, or maybe, who is right now probably red and angry in the face, because the truth is, we don't know if Lucy was giving John Wilkes Booth information. History doesn't tell us. But here's what's interesting. There were pages missing from Booth's journal, pages that were destroyed. And so Eric and I asked ourselves the question, okay, in the context of Stanton's investigation, what could those pages have said? And we decided, okay, let's assume the worst about Lucy Hale. Let's assume that she was giving him information and that Stanton got rid of those pages to finally bury and make, to finally
and it's,
bury.
It's possible that she was giving information. It's possible that she was giving him information with no idea what he was going to do for it or what the conspiracy
That's
was.
Right. Yes. We don't really know. It's possible that Lucy was innocent. I find it a bit hard to believe that she was having an illicit affair with a man and didn't know anything about what he was doing. I think that's giving John Wilkes Booth too much credit.
And we get into...
I don't think he was that good of an actor.
There is a very specific fact that we think is actionable intelligence that Lucy gave him, and we'll get to that and what we discovered there in that bonus episode.
And that's something that I must give Eric a lot of credit for, because this is something that you discovered. This is not something that has been written about, much like the Ellis Star payment. It's not something that people have written a lot about, but it's pretty compelling information. You know, it certainly doesn't look good for Lucy.
So keep listening.
All right. Thank you guys so much for being here. Thank you guys for listening. Tune in to episode 6 of 1865, and then join us back here for 1865 Inside the Episode.